Hello everyone. I take this opportunity to welcome you back to the continuing journey of InnoCast. This is the third episode today. My name is Sairam, Chief Marketing Officer here at InnoMinds. And today we're going to talk about blockchain and blockchain as a technology and how blockchain enables enterprise resilience and truly transforms companies' endeavors in terms of their digital next journeys. Let us dwell into the deeper aspects of blockchain with Ravi Meghuri, Executive Vice President and Head of Technologies ranging from Data Engineering and AI Engineering at Blockchain at InnoMinds. Along with him, Dinesh. Dinesh is the Director for Solution Engineering and is a practitioner for excellence in implementing complex blockchain use cases for global enterprises. Welcome, Ravi and Dinesh. It's my pleasure to have you folks here. I would like to set some business context before we get deeper into the conversation today. It's a staggering statistic that caught my attention. Gartner says about $176 billion, that's the business value that blockchain is estimated to create by 2025. More importantly, the initial implementations seem to be reaching a sort of obsolescence and requires a lot of modern day replacements, even though blockchain in itself is quite in its infancy. And Gartner predicts 90% of current enterprise blockchain platform implementations might have to go through transformative upgradations and replacements by 2021. Then it's just not about the market size of it, right? So we are actually living in the age of COVID, when pretty much everything is becoming contactless and the ability to stay secure is coming at the center bed of remote first strategies. And an IDC research actually says that 40% of tier one financial institutions would have blockchain networks to process their cross-border payments. And that would expect it to be bypassing SWIFT and central banking infrastructure. Imagine, this is going to be a transformatively pivotal moment considering the way cross-border payments would do. Lastly, 75% of regulated companies are expected to adopt blockchain in support of explainable artificial intelligence by 2024. That's again coming in from IDC. And as a service provider and as a technology product engineering digital next company, what also caught our attention was nearly $11 billion of money is going to get expected to be spent on blockchain services, ranging from consulting, implementation, and support. With that said, I'm very thrilled to invite two of our best practitioners of blockchain technology in InnoMind. Ravi, our Executive Vice President for Big Data, Blockchain, Artificial Intelligence, and Analytics and Data Engineering Practice. He also spearheads all our endeavors in emerging technologies, and his endeavor is to ensure autonomous AI becomes a reality for the enterprises. And he has been driving blockchain implementations along with Dinesh, who's going to be our other speaker. While Ravi is a constant speaker on our InnoCast series, Dinesh comes from our sales and solution engineering teams. He's an Indian School of Business alumni with close to 14 years of experience of looking at diverse technologies in terms of solution proposing, solution architecting, and he has been at the forefront of proposing and implementing some of the complex blockchain transformation services that we have delivered by virtue of our strategic partnership with some of the tier four consulting companies and also our own clients in terms of solving complex engineering problems, leveraging the distributed ledger technology that it is and the way blockchain does things, right? So without delaying further, let me welcome Ravi and Dinesh, and I emphasize it's going to be a very, very interesting 45 minutes for all of us. So Ravi and Dinesh, let's talk about how actually blockchain is coming to the centerfold of our digital next endeavor. And I want to also make this quite educative to our listeners, right from demystifying some of the myths that the technology posed to the dimension to which transformative business outcomes can be achieved. Welcome, Ravi and Dinesh. It's my pleasure to have you folks here. So let me sort of give the first question that comes to my mind before we jump into blockchain, right? I have been myself into technology industry. I've been interacting with all of practitioners like you. But there is this continuing myth that blockchain and Bitcoin could be the same thing. For sure, I know it is not. Why don't one of you pick me up and tell that what is exactly the fundamental difference, and then we will move towards blockchain as an enterprise technology that we see. Over to you, Ravi and Dinesh.
I'll answer this and I will let Dinesh also add to this. So blockchain is a technology. Bitcoin is an implementation, period. So the blockchain is the technologies that powers Bitcoin, that powers many other cryptocurrencies, but that's not all. Blockchain powers other solutions that are not just about cryptocurrencies. So blockchain at its core is a technology, and it is comprising of three parts. A quick explanation of what blockchain is. It is the distributed ledger as part of multi-party computing, that it is computing that is done by many parties independently and verified through a consensus mechanism before you commit a particular transaction. So that's the distributed ledger. And the second part is smart contracts. The smart contract is essentially about code as a contract. So just like how you have the physical contracts today between parties, those physical contracts between parties have been converted into code. And the code is exactly the same between the parties. It is non-tamperable by either parties, and therefore either party has the trust that the other party is executing the code in exactly the same way as they have done. And that, you know, sort of replaces the physical contracts, the smart contracts. And the third part is the cryptography foundations in blockchain. So as the name suggests, this is about chain of blocks. And the cryptography foundation means that every transaction is linked to the other transactions that emanate out of this blockchain. And that way you have traceability back to, you know, where it all started. And that gives you the ability to make this tamper-proof, auditable, etc. So to summarize, blockchain is the technology, Bitcoin is an implementation. However, blockchain has evolved and grown beyond Bitcoin, simply from the point of view of use of blockchain. The use of blockchain in enterprises has exceeded money value-wise, that of the Bitcoin. And from an infrastructure point of view, it's long exceeded, in the enterprise context, than the Bitcoin as well.
Brilliant. In fact, though I have been practicing a lot of technology understanding for business value proposition, this has been an eye-opener for me, and you've covered it. It's a complex maze of things, but what caught my attention is, looks like it's very secure and it has wider implications. The second question which I had, which you partly covered, so essentially, how does blockchain as a technology work when you say distributed ledger, and what are the major benefits of using blockchain as a technology? So let's move on to that gear, and probably one of you can explain, and then we would probably see how enterprises are getting benefited from that. Over to you.
So the benefits of blockchain is essentially primarily that today we invest in a lot of processes, a lot of systems, and a lot of intermediaries in almost every process that we have, right? So if you take, say, the classic supply chain, where you have the supplier and the consumer, right? And let's say it is a cross-border transaction. In the banking world, you must be aware of the terms called the bills of lading, right? The bills of exchange, and then there are guarantees, for either party. The banks on the either party, open letters of credit, for either party, and then the transaction happens simply because the supplier cannot trust the consumer that the consumer will, play his part, in terms of the contractual obligations, and vice versa. And that leads to a lot of, complex processes, that leads to a lot of intermediaries, that leads to a lot of additional steps in the process than people dealing with other people directly. So that is what blockchains will eliminate, that you now can have a system where two parties can trust not in each other, but in a code, in a system, in an infrastructure that neither party can actually, unilaterally change any of those things. And that means that the transactions are now going to be direct. Transactions will have far fewer steps, and also the intermediaries, you know, who are earning fees by just being a trusted party for both sides, right, are not going to, you know, sort of, you know, come in. And then more and most importantly, the aspect of blockchain is also about transparency in what is happening and in the cryptographic auditability, that nothing can be tampered and everything can be audited right to the starting block of the blockchain. This means basically that, you know, you have now a whole lot of transparency in business processes that you can achieve with this technology, thereby saving a lot of costs and a lot of, say, additional steps to business processes.
That was so informative and quite deeper in terms of how you put together that, Ravi. But let's understand from an industry standpoint. I understand you've been working with large enterprises and ISVs. What sort of enterprises do you think can actually get benefited from blockchain? And more so, which industries could impact the most? I'm sort of coming from now use cases and how do we drive through operational efficiency, improving transparency and ensuring security from an enterprise angle. So take us through that journey before we talk about specific use cases.
So as Ravi mentioned, at the heart of it, while blockchain facilitates is in the transactions that have a lot of intermediaries going across it. So instead of putting the faith across intermediaries, what the transacting entities do is they put their faith in a platform, in a code, where unilaterally none of these entities can go ahead and make modifications to the code. So across enterprises, across industries where there are parties that require some intermediary, some third-party assistance in authenticating, authorizing, or even standing by the transactions, this is where the technology can be enforced and the cost of the transactions can be minimized by replacing these intermediaries with the platform. So across industries, you can see such as in financial services, which Ravi already outlined. So financial services is at the forefront of this evolution of the blockchain technology, and then followed by the governments and the public services sector, which is where there are a lot of multiple entities participating, coming into a transaction which requires data sharing between them in a trusted manner. And then other than this, there is the supply chain ecosystem, wherein again there are multiple parties which are coming together and transacting onto the same information. So there are other industries, also healthcare and a few others, wherever. But at the core of it, wherever there are multiple entities that are coming and doing the transaction on the same information, and there is some assurance required on the resiliency of this transaction, that is where blockchain can serve its need.
Perfect. So as I carry it, when you are in a business need of an assurance of a resiliency and a completeness of a transaction in its entirety, with security being totally non-compromised, I think that's where blockchain plays a significant role. That's a very, very defining moment. So particularly for financial services, right? Do you think blockchain is a game changer for BFSI? Because that's a sector where paramount importance is attached to data security, the value of data, and more importantly, the transactions that get exchanged, and those models facing serious challenges. So what's your perspective on that, Ravi and Dinesh?
Financial services, you know, primarily have seen two major disruptions, right? And one is digital, where, you know, it's no longer about a branch, it's no longer about the physical aspect of a bank or a branch, and it's everything digital, etc., right? And the second major disruption, what I would call, is called disintermediation. Banks have often, you know, sort of made money by being that intermediary, right, between a lender and a borrower, between a paying party and a party that is receiving the payment, etc. So what the digital transformation of the banking has meant is basically that you no longer have the constraint of the physical branch. And this then means that any party can now provide these intermediation services and not just a bank. And we have seen in many countries how the payments particularly have been completely, you know, like say, upstaged, you know, by new entrants, you know, which have you know, like say, you know, went past the incumbents. You know, for example, if you look at cross-border transactions, Ripple, which is one of the leading platforms in the blockchain, has built up a $1 billion, you know, remittances market by itself, right? You know, and this they have done in less than about time compared to, you know, decades of, you know, existence of other remittance meets, etc. So this, the, you know, the digital transformation of the bank coupled with the opportunity it now gives that new entrants can then be a disintermediation gives rise to the fact that with blockchain technology, you know, there is much more greater potential, you know, for this to be happening. So right now, for example, the banks have been mostly playing a catch-up game, you know, if I may say, in terms of being alert to this and ensuring that they ride on the blockchain technology. So whether it is payments, whether it is mortgages, whether it is KYC or AML, etc., there have been new entrants, you know, small banks, you know, digital banks, bond digital banks, etc., which have used the blockchain technologies to, you know, jumpstart and get a platform that can be entirely digital through blockchain than the bigger bank.
So now, particularly in the COVID situation, right? So how do you think blockchain technology can make supply chains resilient? Isn't it the fact that COVID has created a compelling case for wider integration of blockchain, particularly with global supply chains getting adversely affected due to lack of transparency and interoperability in their network? Do you think blockchain can play a role here?
Yes, Sai. Blockchain can play a role in COVID from two points of view, right? The the supply chain, yes, you know, the transparency in the supply chain and the ability to provide real-time information in terms of what's happening on the supply chain, you know, it's also called digital supply chains, right? The ability to not just view and monitor a supply chain, but the ability to, you know, be dynamic in terms of, you know, what you are doing with respect to, say, a supply chain outcome. Like, say, you want, for example, some shipments to be tracked until they arrive. And if you have a problem with those shipments, you know, you want to take a real-time decision in terms of what needs to be done and then do things like rerouting or dynamic routing or some other aggregation, etc. So these are all the use cases with respect to the, you know, blockchain that we see here that can disrupt the supply chains. Another aspect of supply chain that blockchain enables is the aspect of aggregation. You know, the supply chains have, you know, obviously driven a lot of, you know, value and efficiency through aggregations. You know, you must have heard of the third-party logistics, the fourth-party logistics, which is aggregating over the 3PL. So the blockchains form the core information backbone for, you know, giving real-time information about the large, complex, you know, global supply chains that will help the aggregators take the right decisions and the right positions in terms of, you know, where and how to, you know, do the aggregation and the disaggregation. So from that point of view as well, blockchains, and I saw, you know, one of the you know, analysts quoting that more than probably 90% of international supply chains, overseas supply chains, whether it is by the sea or by the air or even by the land, are likely to be monitored and managed by some blockchain technology or not in a matter of a few years.
Absolutely. I think anything that comes to monitoring, I think it's getting more and more attention now. But before we jump into the second part of the dialogue, where we'll talk about some practical use cases of what InnoMinds has done, one last question on the deeper technical note. So what is it about microchains that you were speaking, you and me walked the other day, you know, while we were in the office a month and a half ago, where you were talking about microchains, and also from a microservices architecture, does it have any parallels to when it comes to blockchain implementations? And overall, how can an architectural view be created to bring a transformative change in the enterprise? Is there a view that you guys could share there?
I will answer the microchains and I'll let Dinesh answer the microservices part. So one of the myths of blockchain, and this one definitely needs to be busted, is that blockchains provide value only if you have large consortiums that you right. have consortiums probably involving all the banks, all the brokerages, you know, all the payment entities and things like that. This has been, you know, unfortunately, you know, one of the hurdles that the blockchain technology had to, you know, sort of cross, you know, in order to get wider adoption. So this myth basically somehow it got propagated. And that is why you see a lot of you know, banks say that, okay, unless I get this large consortium, maybe I won't get the benefit. So we wanted to, you know, sort of obviously bust the myth. And what we have seen is that it doesn't require a very large consortium to get the benefit. You know, we have implemented blockchain in scenarios involving just one vendor and a customer, right? Just a supplier vendor, where there is a large amount of, you know, information gap between the vendor and the supplier. So whether it is the classic, you know, classic supplying and invoicing and payments, you know, processes as part of accounts payables, or whether this is about global deliveries and global, you know, invoices and the taxation aspects and things like that. So we believe that just the two, a vendor and a customer, are good enough to start a micro chain, you know, between the two parties, and they can actually, you know, sort of bridge that information deficit between the two, leading to a lot of efficiency in the process of all the supply chain aspects, as well as the accounting and the payment aspect. So that is the concept of a micro chain, a small, self-contained, you know, multi-party. It can even be just two chain where you can actually bridge the information deficit between the parties. So I'll ask Dinesh to answer the question on the microservices.
So from a microservices perspective, the blockchains have the inherent concept of decentralized applications, which is where the entities are hosting the entire application stack in its own vicinity, in its own ecosystem. So this is where the application itself can sit on a microservices architecture. But the underlying ledger, which is actually going and connecting with the other entities to share and to collaborate onto the information, this is where the information comes more as a part of the hybrid architecture. So it's not a pure play microservices architecture. There's a combination of microservices as well as the shared information that goes across these services. So think of the ecosystem wherein an IoT device would want to go ahead and establish a communication with a blockchain. All of these IoT devices will have the services embedded in them, which is whenever an invocation happens to these services, then at runtime, they'll go ahead, invoke a service on the cloud, and then push the data onto blockchain. But at the back end, the blockchain is there, it is running, it is continuously sharing information, it is receiving information, and the scene is updated with the latest information at that point in time.
Correct. I get that. That is, you know, more than... deeper than what even I thought about. So now let's jump into some of the real-time practical use cases, right? So I know that InnoMinds has been doing substantial work in terms of the emerging technology focus with blockchain. Why don't one of you run me through a bit of the blockchain work that we have done, sort of different type of blockchain services and technologies there, in terms of the Hyperledger implementations and variants of that, and then we can jump into specific use cases that you guys have created on blockchain. So that way the listeners would also be able to reflect upon the practical benefits that we have delivered for large enterprise customers using blockchain. Go ahead. Yeah.
So at InnoMinds, over the past 3 years, we have worked on more than 20 plus customer driven use cases on blockchains, which spans across multiple technologies such as private Ethereum, Quorum, Corda, and more recently, Hyperledger Fabric has been the platform of choice for many enterprises. And along with that, we also have exposure towards working on these blockchain platforms such as SAP blockchain and Oracle blockchain. And most of the implementations that we have done is in the space of private and permission blockchains. We had one or two varying instances on public blockchains. But since we work mostly with enterprises and ISPs, our work is more oriented towards the private blockchains. And from the industry's perspective that we have served, we have built use cases across financial services, public sectors, healthcare, supply chain and logistics, and retails and financial transactions. And an inspiring fact about the work that we do at InnoMinds is more than one third of the solutions that we have developed are actually running in production, which is where over the past 1 year we have been maintaining those solutions. We have been managing those solutions. So that is where our complete experience in the life cycle of blockchain, right from concept validation to the consumption and from there on maintaining it and enhancing it, comes through our experience.
I see. Okay, that is very interesting. And Ravi, do you want to add on to that further?
So in addition to just solving, you know, a given industry or a customer problem, we believe one of, again, the hurdles to the blockchain has been essentially about setting up the infrastructure and setting up the smart contracts. You know, I mentioned a critical part of the blockchain's technology, and also doing this on either the public cloud or on the on-premises, you know, seamlessly. So we realized that a lot of our customers have a kind of learning curve to get over the blockchain and then do the implementation. So with that in mind, we have a great starter package, which we call as Blockchain as a Service, where with very simple and intuitive commands, you know, through a GUI or otherwise, you can actually set up a multi-party compute environment, you can provision infrastructure, you can onboard entities, you know, to be governing their respective, you know, nodes as part of this multi-party computing. And then we have templates for smart contracts that people can actually take. And we also have the dApps, the decentralized application templates, where you can then power all of these into the web or mobile GUIs, you know, for people to be able to see as well as, you know, create these transactions on the blockchain. So the blockchain as a service that, you know, we have developed acts like a great starter package and allows you to get a jump start in terms of the blockchain implementations, and it allows you to test, you know, the benefits of blockchain through POCs very quickly, and then allows you to then scale up and convert them to, you know, enterprise, you know, ready implementations in a matter of few months.
Awesome. Just to sort of intervene there, I'm also very glad to kind of reiterate the fact that Blockchain Magnet magazine featured InnoMinds as one of the 15 only blockchain as a service offering companies with a recognition. I believe that's a reflection of what you just spoke about. So my congratulations to all of you to be doing that. And from what I noted down in the various discussions that we have had, correct me if I'm wrong, some of the use cases and MVPs that we developed, transfer pricing to facilitate remittances and chargebacks between subsidiary entities, that's a use case, and proxy voting even to simplify the voting process for corporate entities, isn't it? So are there any learnings that you want to share from these two projects?
Yes.
That our listeners can take away?
Yes. Yeah. So the proxy voting, you know, is a great example of how the micro chains work. So one of our customers is they basically work to first determine who are all the eligible, you know, proxies or voters, you know, for a given, say somebody like, say, Microsoft, right? So they determine who are all the shareholders, who are eligible shareholders, who can participate in the vote on the voting side. And then they issue a statement for which, you know, you need to get the votes on. And then you basically go and seek the votes. So the good thing about the micro chain is that you need not conceptualize this solution as something that replaces all existing proxy voting through the blockchain technology.
So far it has been a very insightful, you know, traversal of the technical nuances of blockchain, enterprise use cases, and also some of the specific work that InnoMinds has been doing. What are the current challenges that you would see as a practitioner in terms of both implementing and evangelizing blockchain, and what could be those immediate solutions to overcome those practical challenges? Any one of you could answer this.
Significantly, nobody has had a kind of a doubt on the technology of blockchain in terms of, you know, why it is secure, you know, how it basically helps in, for example, aspects of privacy, in establishing systems of trust and things like that. If at all, I think, you know, the challenge has been in terms of what exactly are going to be my business benefits, you know, in order to, you know, move my current systems, which are on a different technology, to blockchain, right? And there have been a lot of, you know, sort of questions around, hey, we've been exchanging questions, information through EDI, you know, enterprise data integrations, etc. You know, what does blockchain, you know, do differently compared to EDI and things like that. So these have been the challenges, and to solve that, you know, the business benefit, InnoMinds has, you know, come up with a framework, you know, to establish as to, you know, when is a good time to do blockchain. And we covered some parts of it, that if your process is, you know, having many steps, and if many of those steps have parties that are not internal to you, right, and if you have, you know, cross-border, for example, and you need a system of trust, you know, between these entities, etc., you know, those are good times to do a solution on blockchain. So we have a complete framework for doing this, and not just us, I think almost all the leading implementation parties of blockchain have developed such robust frameworks to articulate the business value of blockchain, to go through a structured process where you will see whether a particular business scenario or a use case has you know, value to be obtained by implementing a blockchain solution, etc. So that is one of the challenges. And the second challenge is also the you know, the mysterious nature of you know, blockchain. How does it work? It's not as easy as, you know, how, let's say, databases have worked in the past. You know, I can actually, you know, authorize a transaction in a database, and I can instantly see it immediately that this transaction has been effected. Blockchain is not exactly like that. So that you know, learning curve is then as to, you know, why enterprises you know, probably are thinking as to, you know, do I have to reorient skill sets, you know, towards working on the blockchain, etc. And that is where the you know, the abstractions you know, that we have built, or the accelerator packs or the starter packs that we have built, is a significant you know, way to, you know, reduce that barrier and ensure that the adoption of blockchain, you know, happens quicker and in an easier way. So at the end of the day, you know, blockchain is still you know, a technology that stores data, that processes data. So much of the higher level you know, application aspects, etc., are not touched by the blockchain. So the blockchain only works at the system of the truth and in the smart contracts, leaving the higher level applications to be exactly the way they are today. So it's also a reason why you know, this minimizes the cost of implementing a blockchain solution as well.
Awesome, awesome. So let's get to the last part of the discussion. So both of you could, you know, so what do you think is the future of blockchain? Where are we heading?
Yes, so the blockchain has seen its hype cycle. You know, like all technologies, it was its you know, peak you know, a few years back, and now it is on the recovery path where you are getting tangible you know, benefits out of blockchain solution. We ourselves have created a lot of value in digital supply chains, in networks, and you know, sort of in communications between networks, in healthcare, in the financial services using blockchain. So from a future of technology point of view, you know, from a growth perspective, there is you know, significant you know, and most of the analyst recommendations that you saw, and their predictions that you saw, indicate that we are going to see a CAGR of about 40 to 50% on the enterprise adoption of blockchain technology. And the technology itself has evolved. It is no longer about one blockchain. It is about chain of chains. And it is about interoperability between chains, right? And that's right. Actually meaning that, you know, this is no longer a monopoly of, you know, one party, like say an Ethereum, etc. That, you know, a Hyperledger and an Ethereum can coexist, or an Ioteca or an IoT-based blockchain can coexist with, say, an enterprise blockchain. So the technology is evolving very fast and quickly pivoting itself to serve the enterprise needs and not just the consumer or the public services or the government needs. So the technology is very fascinating and emerging. And also from the cost of computing and the scalability aspects also, there is a significant improvement in terms of the number of blocks you can commit, you know, per second. And these are actually, you know, turning out to be, you know, a great, you know, sort of say, way to do not just, you know, low value transactions, okay, but high velocity transactions as well. So we are quite excited that sure, from a value, from a technology, and from the you know, the barriers to adoption point of view, there is a significant you know, growth, and we see a future where blockchain actually is a system of trust across a lot of, say, complex you know, global processes and global supply chains.
Awesome. Ravi and Dinesh, with all the background of so far what we discussed about, typically dive down into few use cases that you might want to bring in. I understand InnoMinds have done some significant work in terms of facilitating transfer pricing remittances and also doing a proxy voting for voting process of corporate entities using blockchain. And probably these are also a minimum viable products to test the market. Ravi, do you want to throw some insights into this a little bit more?
Certainly. So the proxy voting use case is a great example of things, you know, that I alluded to earlier. So one of our customers is a large player in the proxy voting space. And what they do is basically to provide the services of registering the proxies, registering the statements, and then doing the voting process, and then determining the vote. The customer of ours has been a very early adopter of blockchain. So this is an implementation more than 4 years back, right? And and what they have done is basically that instead of, you know, trying for a very large consortium of all the proxy voting stakeholders, they quickly, you know, sort of piloted a proxy voting solution with a large, you know, bank, which is an investor, right, into many companies and many stocks, etc. So they steered that particular you know, registration of the proxy vote, you know, through this proxy voting solution, right? And then they quickly saw that this was eliminating a lot of intermediaries and also reducing the time it takes to, you know, issue a statement and record the vote. As you know, we are going through some very unique situations in the world right now due to COVID, and what this demands is an agile enterprise that can actually take decisions quickly, right? You know, and the current existing process of proxy voting, you know, with its timelines, etc., can be significantly reduced, you know, through a digital proxy voting that is enabled through blockchain, and that is a quick benefit, you know, that you know, our customer got in addition to cutting down on the cost of the intermediaries and the fees and the charges that they would you know, take. So I'll ask.
Sure, understood. So Dinesh, I think you have driven some complex use cases yourself, ranging from renewable energy certificates trading to management of smart cities, or invoice and payment reconciliation in a shipping domain, cyber resiliency for financial services, and network security for threat management. You could pick up anything that is close to your heart and then probably share some insights on how and what has been implemented using blockchain for any of the use cases.
Sure, Sairo. So be a broad-based framework that can be extrapolated to any of the asset tracking capabilities. So the underlying principle there is that how you can take physical assets and convert them into its digital equivalent, create asset tokens over the blockchain, and then the individuals who are going and going to transact on these asset tokens, there is the concept of network tokens as well, which is essentially a permissioning capability for a partner and trade on that asset. So if a particular person has enough network tokens with him and he is the owner of the asset tokens, that allows him the permission to go ahead and transact. That is where the capability of the blockchain comes in terms of system building, the auditable trade aspect, which is through the combination of network tokens and assets. That's where any of the asset framework can be extrapolated, which was primarily in the context of network security. So using blockchain as a technology, how you can events that happen at the network and then try to discover patterns and anomalous behavior in those events and then act on these truth, which is where any unintended behavior gets out and then this gets captured into a separate transaction and then the contract irons out these details. So that way a network can be fault resilient, it can be secured, and through the use of cryptography also over the network, whenever the transactions happen, it is always in an encrypted manner and only the person to whom the information using his own secure keys, he can go ahead and decrypt the information. So that's where in a threat management scenario over the network, how you can prevent your network and the network is the overall aspect into that use case.
Awesome. I think this has been one of those deeper journeys into a very complex technology landscape of blockchain that I would ever participate. And it must be a very strong revelation and set of takeaways for the listeners for sure. Just to summarize, the way I understand, we sort of demystified blockchain is much larger than what Bitcoins are, and Bitcoin is just an implementation, while the distributed ledger technology has wider positive implications in terms of enterprise use cases ranging from BFSI to cryptocurrency and payments and telecom. Deep dwells into transfer pricing sort of use cases and proxy voting, and wherever there is scope for smart contracts and resilient transactions with security, I'm understanding that blockchain has greater role to play, and it also has enormous potential to sort of look from an AML to fraud and then also cross-border payments and ensure cyber resiliency for financial services when companies are struggling to be compliant, particularly in the remote first situation. So thank you very much. I kind of also take away the fact that InnoMinds in itself has done more than 20 client driven use cases of blockchain for various levels of complexity, and it's one of the 15 blockchain as a service offering companies, and the kind of competencies range from Ethereum, Quorum, Corda and Hyperledger and Ripple to crypto economics and smart contracts. So I am very, very excited to be hosting this show, and needless to say, we will welcome you back for further journeys into deeper technologies that we will unfold for our listeners. Stay safe, everyone. It's been quite a challenging time that humanity is navigating, but we at InnoMinds have been resilient in helping our customers navigate this journey. And our quest to share our thought leadership perspectives never ends. And InnoCast aims to fulfill that through meaningful podcasts from a practitioner standpoint. Thank you for being with us. And we continue to come back on much deeper and interesting topics. Thank you, Ravi and Dinesh. You've been great. Everyone.